Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Steve Junker. It's Friday, April 26th, and this is our weekly news roundup when we discuss some of the top local news stories of the week with colleagues in the print and digital media. Joining me in the studio from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Steve.
And a little later in the program, we'll speak with Landry Harlan at the Vineyard Gazette, Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Josh Balling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. We'll check in with Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner and George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. And now a look at some of the news here around the Cape and the islands. Jeff, let's start with a story about the Massachusetts flag and an effort that's underway to change it. Some towns are looking at a resolution on this at their town meetings.
They are, Steve. And for those who aren't familiar with the Massachusetts state seal or the flag, It does have a Native American with a sword above, with a hand holding a sword.
I think a lot of us have seen it but never looked at the details of this
exactly.
Image. It just looks like a state authority symbol, and you look at it and look away. It's kind of surprising what's on it.
It's very surprising, and you do. You see it everywhere. But there's a movement underway statewide to change the flag and seal, and it's coming to the Cape. It's gaining a lot of traction over the course of the next month. Provincetown has already agreed to support legislation to review the seal, which, by the way, that legislation was sponsored by two state reps, one from Jamaica Plain, one from Northampton, who are saying, you know, that state seal, it's unwittingly harmful and misunderstood by citizens. So, you know, probably didn't have bad intentions. But if you look at it now, you know, you kind of scratch your head. But the towns here on the Cape that are taking this up by way of petition article at their town meetings this spring are Eastham, Orleans, Brewster, and Chatham. And as I mentioned, Provincetown has already agreed to support this.
Now, the seal was created a long time ago.
A long time ago. 1898,
I think, something like that.
It was.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. And a lot of folks say that it's a reminder of the genocide of the natives during the colonization of the country. And what this bill would do, if it does move forward at the State House, would create a 20-seat commission. Five of those seats would be filled by Native Americans, and it would be chaired by Jim Peters, who the State Commission of Indian Affairs head, and he's also a member of the Wampanoag tribe. And they, in turn, would get together, meet, and recommend a new design. And while this is fairly new as far as coming in front of town meetings, this actually has been going on for several decades. People have noticed this in the past, and a lot of people feel it's especially important to address this as we get ready for the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the Europeans here.
There are a number of things about the seal that people are taking issue with here.
They are. Not only the sword and the Native American, and Cedric Cromwell, the chairman of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe, is concerned about this as well. But he said, if you look at the Native American depicted in the seal, it's not even someone from a tribe from the Northeast.
Right.
So that petition is moving forward in the next month.
As you mentioned, the 400th anniversary of the Europeans' arrival is coming up here in 2020. We're looking to celebrate that, Provincetown and Plymouth. And it's really a moment to sort of examine all of this as what people are feeling.
Exactly.
Jeff, Stop and Shop workers and the company reached a deal over the weekend, which brought about the end of an 11-day strike.
That's right. That strike, a tentative agreement with the union and the 31,000 employees affected by the strike, that happened on Easter Sunday. Of course, Stop and Shop has 16 stores here on the Cape and Islands. It was a fairly significant impact if you've been shopping in the last few weeks. Going to some of the other stores, if you could park, you'd get in there, there'd be crowds, and really not a lot of stock on the shelves.
And depending on where you were, there's not many alternatives. If you're out in Provincetown, Stop and Shop is the supermarket. If you're on the islands, on Nantucket, Stop and Shop is your major supermarket there.
That's right. A couple little other alternatives on the Vineyard, but I'm sure it had a big effect there. But the agreement does seem to be something that the union is looking for. It would increase wages for all associates, continue what they're calling excellent health care benefits and pension benefits for eligible employees, and it would keep the time and a half pay for current members of the union for those that work on Sundays. It is a tentative agreement. It hasn't been ratified yet. But on Monday, there are going to be ratification meetings on Nantucket, in Oak Bluffs on the Vineyard, and for a lot of the Cape stores, their meeting will be up in Foxborough.
Now, the Stop & Shop is owned by a Dutch company named Ahold Delhaize.
Right.
And this week, they put out a number. They attached a number to how much this may have cost the company, this 11-day strike, and it's a big number.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's about $100 million is what they suggested this strike cost the company.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that.
We're going to speak right now with Landry Harlan at the Vineyard Gazette. Good morning, Landry.
Good morning, Steve.
Landry, last week we talked about the effort on the island to start a housing bank using a portion of the funds from the new short-term rental tax, and this is to address the problems of affordable year-round housing. The issue had failed at three town meetings when we spoke, but proponents were looking for one of two up island towns to approve the article. Things have changed already. Tell us what's happened now.
Right. So at the Chilmark meeting, the voters kind of decided to go back to the drawing board on the housing bank. And the twist in it was one of the proponents of the bank was actually the one that wanted to push it and effectively defeat the proposal because there was a new alternative proposal that they wanted to agree on as they wait for hashing out more of the details on the housing bank. And this alternative one that was voted in by Chilmark and agreed to by other towns is kind of setting aside money from this short-term tax. I was going to go to the housing bank now, but kind of setting it aside so later if the housing bank were to be accepted, there would be some money in a fund already for it. So kind of in the end, after all this back and forth, both sides agreed to an alternative.
Landry, another story I'd like you to catch us up on briefly, and this is also one that we've talked about in the past on the Roundup. This is over the contention of a pair of plaques on the Civil War monument in Oak Bluffs. And this is going to get a public hearing now, it sounds like.
Yes, so after some discussion at their meeting on Tuesday, Oak Bluffs Limited decided to hold a forum next month for both sides to kind of come out and give more historical information, have just a longer discussion about the significance of this monument. It's been a lot of back and forth in meetings, and a lot of people wanted to kind of to push it to a larger venue so more people could attend for this very hotly debated and controversial sensitive issue.
So tell us when the forum is going to be.
It's going to be on May 21st from in the evening, 6 to 8 p.m. A venue is yet to be decided, but it's expected to be a large one. A lot of people are interested in this issue and want to add their comments to it.
And briefly, the plaques in contention here, they characterize the wound over the Civil War as being sort of healed. Is that right? And people feel like this is not the way that this should be characterized in the town.
Right. So the wording says the chasm is closed, and of course some people feel like that wound is still open, and kind of a bit of the source of the confusion is the statue is actually of a Union soldier, but it's the plaques themselves that are honoring Confederate soldiers. It came from a Confederate soldier who came to the island and had it put there as an act of reconciliation. So some people say that reconciliation is part of it, and we should honor all soldiers who fought, and some people say that again, that wound is still open, and any reference to the Confederacy is just bad to have in the town.
And there are a number of options about what to do here. Some people saying it's about putting context around these plaques or maybe removing them and putting them in the museum.
Right. So the kind of the petition from the NAACP of Martha's Vineyard is actually to put these in a museum where they feel like, you know, we're not removing history entirely. People who are still interested in that part of the vineyard history can go see that at the museum. But just, you know, when people are coming right off the boat and that statue's right there and people come over and read the plaque, they feel like that's not an appropriate place to be honoring the Confederacy.
Landry Harlan at the Vineyard Gazette. Landry, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. With us from the Cape Cod Times, Jeff Spillane. We're going to the break now. When we come back, we'll hear more from Jeff and we'll speak with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. There's more in a moment. This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. With us from the Cape Cod Times, Jeff Spillane. Jeff, bald eagles are back. This is a great story. We have a documented nesting pair of eagles on Cape Cod.
Yeah, this is such good news, Steve. And it's in Brewster, and actually right by the transfer station. And this may be the Cape's first documented nesting pair of bald eagles in more than 100 years. Hard to believe. Doug Frazier, our reporter who covers the environment and some of the towns on the outer and lower Cape, was actually there on Earth Day, fittingly, on Monday. And actually classified this as kind of a symbol of the success of the Earth Day movement. These bald eagles, of course, were on the brink of extinction. The last nest that was documented was in Sandwich in 1905. And the pesticide DDT back in the 1970s was thought to contribute to the problems with the bald eagles. What it would do, this pesticide would thin the eggshells so that they couldn't support the weight of the parents in the nest. And, of course, that was banned. Mass Audubon, science coordinator, he's declared this nest is real. So,
and it's no small big. It's no small nest. It's a big deal, but it's a big nest.
Yeah,
too.
You know, we sometimes see nests that are in our houses and our front porches, back porches. This one is big. It's 5 feet across, and they say a few feet deep, and they're often hidden. And there was a great quote in Doug's story. They make a nest the size of a Volkswagen, but they're surprisingly hard to find.
That's a quote from Mark Faraday, who listeners here will know as our weekly bird report correspondent.
Right.
And he's with Mass Audubon.
Yeah, and the eagles were reintroduced here in Massachusetts in the Quabbin Reservoir, that's out in the western part of the state, in 1982. But this is the first time we've seen them back here in the Cape and Islands. These are all the right signs, according to Audubon science coordinator, but we'll definitely know, it'll be for certain, in the next few days or weeks when we see the eagles start to undertake some feeding behavior. That means that there are babies in the nest.
So everyone's looking for now is that there's eggs, that they've hatched, that they're
right.
raising up young.
That you're coming in and out with food for them.
One thing that's noted here is, well, there's a couple of things. One of them is the wingspan of these birds.
7 feet.
7 feet. It's a big bird.
And, you know, I almost feel like, oh, gosh, I want to go down and take a look at this, but probably not a good idea.
That was the other thing I wanted to point out. Right. They kind of say that really the idea now is to leave them alone.
Leave them alone.
Yes. We are going to speak right now with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, Steve.
Tim, you've got an interesting story about the efforts of the town to support renovations at the local VFW post. And there's a will within the town to do this, but a very old law is making this difficult.
Indeed. The VFW post here on George Ryder Road, the folks in charge of that submitted a petition article for the upcoming town meeting. They're looking for $200,000 to renovate the building, which has some heating problems and a leaky roof. But there's an obscure 1855 law called the Anti-Aid Amendment to the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights. And this was originally passed to prevent public funds from being spent mostly on Catholic schools and hospitals, you know, way back 150 or more years ago. But it remains on the books. And the selectmen were told by town council that because of that law, they can't spend taxpayer money on a private institution. So selectmen are trying to find a way to help the town's veterans who have been taking care of this post for more than 60 years and have recently had a little bit of financial difficulty. They're going to be calling a special town meeting for May 14th, which is the second night of the annual town meeting, to ask voters to purchase an interest in the VFW property. You know, exactly what form that will take is still being worked out. It could be an easement or outright purchase of the property or a portion of the property. But by doing that, the town would be able to appropriate money to help make improvements and repairs to the facility. So between now and then, the selectmen and VFW officials will be meeting to negotiate the details of that, which they hope will result in a workable proposal, which they'll present to the voters at town meeting on May 14th.
Can you just speak a little bit about this law that sort of triggered all of this?
Well, apparently it was put in place by the Know Nothing Party around that time, and it was a time when there was a lot of immigration from Ireland and other sort of Catholic European countries. And they really didn't want to use public funds to support the schools and hospitals that were being founded at that time for specifically by and for the Catholic population. It's interesting because the chairman of selectmen, Dean Nicastro, called it a reprehensible law, but he said it's still a law. And I guess efforts over the years to repeal it have failed. So it's still a law that the Commonwealth has to adhere to.
Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Tim, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
With me, let's go over to Josh Balling right now at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Josh, the federal government has said that the offshore wind company Vineyard Wind will have adverse impact on the island's status as National Historic Landmark. Explain, what does that mean, and what is the island looking for in exchange here?
Well, what it means is not exactly clear just yet to town officials, other than the fact that they are concerned that the wind farm about 14 miles southwest of the island's south shore could have some impacts, visual impacts from the beaches on the south shore, could impact visitors' decisions about coming to Nantucket or not. The entire island is a National Historic Landmark, prides itself on its sense of preservation, on its historic buildings, and on its beautiful beaches. And town officials are a little concerned that with this designation, and they were concerned even before the designation came out about the visual impacts as well as other impacts that the wind farm could have on the island. So they're looking to Vineyard Wind right now to fund a number of projects ranging from beach nourishment and dune restoration to the creation of an artificial reef as mitigation for some of these adverse effects. Other local projects that Town Energy Coordinator Lauren Sinatra suggested Vineyard Wind might be able to pay for to alleviate that impact include support for the town's coastal resiliency plan, a sand replenishment study, repairs to the only bridge on the island, and renovation of the former Tom Nevers Navy base. Town officials in the town fully support offshore wind power, Sinatra said, but they have a number of concerns about the project, the aesthetics being one of them, the potential environmental impact on the water south of the island being another. A number of fishermen, including really the island's only remaining commercial fishermen, have come out and said that the construction, at the very least, could have some significant impacts on fishing grounds in the area. So they're looking right now. The town council has sent a letter to the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management asking for some details about what type of compensation the town could get to mitigate the impacts on the historic designation landmark, or historic landmark designation at the very least.
Josh, I want to ask you about another story in the paper this week. Seaplane service could be coming to Nantucket, and one of the interesting things here is that it would not be to the harbors.
Right. Seaplanes, they would be taking off potentially from New York City, from the 23rd Street dock in New York City, but not landing on Nantucket's harbors. These planes are capable of landing both on land and on the water, and as anybody who's been to Nantucket at any time of the year, but certainly in the summer, knows, there really isn't any place for seaplanes to land in Nantucket or Mattucket harbors, given the amount of boat traffic that's out there. So this stems from Cape Air announcing last week that it was combining operations with Shoreline Aviation, which is the largest seaplane operator on the East Coast. They provide charter seaplane services throughout the Northeast, Florida, down into the Caribbean. And they said that while seasonal service is initially planned between New York City and the Hamptons, Shelter Island, and Montauk, those seaplanes could be making their way to Nantucket in the near future, potentially even by this summer. The airport says that they haven't been in contact with Cape Air about this service yet, but they would certainly be open to it. They would welcome it, and these planes would be landing again at Nantucket Memorial Airport, not on the harbors, either in Mattucket or downtown. These are, again, private, not private, but charter operations. It wouldn't be regularly scheduled service, but they're looking to the niche market, particularly business people from Wall Street looking to get to Nantucket quickly for the weekend or for longer amounts of time.
Josh Bowling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Josh, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
With me from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. Jeff, you reported a story this week looking at how Hyannis is trying to take on questions of water quality, and in particular, we're talking here about drinking water contaminants.
That's right. PFAS, which we've been hearing a lot about in the recent years, those are man-made chemicals that are considered a contaminant emerging concern. They're largely found in firefighting foams, some nonstick products, stain-resistant product carpets, becoming more and more of an issue, not only here on the Cape, but throughout the country. And the DEP recently announced that it's reviewing its guidelines for the amount of these chemicals and looking at some new standards for the levels that can be in public water supplies. And it's significant. It's reducing it from 70 parts per trillion to 20 parts per trillion. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to, over the course of the next few months in the year, there's going to be public review and comments accepted, and a full regulatory process wouldn't go into effect for a year, if indeed it does. Right now, there's only guidelines. There's no regulations. So the Cape is going to have a couple chances to weigh in on issues involving PFAS in the next few weeks. On Thursday night, this coming Thursday, May 2nd, there's going to be a meeting at Barnstable Town Hall regarding the cleanup of the Barnstable County Fire and Rescue Training Academy. There has been contamination there. It's located over by the Barnstable Airport. That's actually triggered some health advisories from the Hyannis water supply twice since 2015. Especially of concern would be pregnant women, infants, breastfeeding mothers. And this meeting was actually is coming to be as a result of a citizen's petition It's actually part of DEP regulations that says if there's a cleanup site in your community and you don't think you're getting enough information or your involvement in this, if you provide us with a petition, then the whoever's responsible for the cleanup has to have a meeting. It's called a public involvement plan. And that's once again going to be Thursday at Barnesville Town Hall from 5 to 6:30. I expect quite a few residents of Hyannis to be there. There's going to be a plan presented for the cleanup as well. And in regards to the new regulations for these chemicals, the DEP, as part of the public process, has scheduled 4 meetings at their regional offices throughout the state. But they did add, especially for the Cape, 1 meeting that isn't at their office, and that's once again going to be in Barnstable. It's going to be at Barnstable Town Hall on May 28th at 12:30, and that is a Tuesday after Memorial Day.
Hmm. We're going to speak right now with Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Casey, a television show wants to shoot a number of episodes in Provincetown, but one of the locations they want to use in particular is proving problematic. Tell us what's happening here.
Okay. Starz TV, a premium cable and satellite channel, wants to film scenes of its original series called Hightown for 10 days in early June. And the police chief, James Golden, is objecting to letting them shoot on Commercial Street, which is, as we all know, the town's main drag on the waterfront. The show is very much related to Provincetown. It stars a hard-partying National Marine Fisheries officer who is a lesbian and lives in Provincetown. She discovers a body washed ashore during Carnival weekend and becomes determined to solve the murder. This takes her into the heart of Cape Cod's opioid epidemic and allows her to face some of her own demons. Monica Raymond of NBC's Chicago Fire is the fisheries officer. So as you can see, the plot very much revolves around Provincetown, and one particular scene is very key to their plot, and that is the scene that the police chief doesn't want, which is taking 10 hours out of a day in June, closing down Commercial Street, constructing a float, recreating Carnival with 250 to 300 extras, and shutting down the street. The Golden only has 26 officers total at this time in June, and he is reluctant to bring in other officers because it's so last minute, and he's not sure they will know the town very well. And he says they can shoot in other places, but he's not so happy about the Commercial Street location. So it's unresolved at this point. The network says that they would give the town money. They would also compensate the businesses for their lost customers' foot traffic during that time, and they'll pay all the police detail. But as far as we know, the town has still not given the network a parade permit, which is what they need to do this shooting.
So they need.
So we'll wait and see on that one.
They need a parade permit. The town manager is suggesting that maybe Provincetown needs to think about a more formal process for film and television companies coming to town.
Yeah, because they're obviously not even close to the same thing. 10 hours is much different than an hour or two, and. Businesses can still operate during a parade, but in this case, they will be totally taken over by the filming. So, yeah, so it's a big difference. And we'll see. The town manager just left, too, so now there's no town manager.
Left to take another job with the state, yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. Right. He left to take another job with the MBTA. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting summer.
Already shaping up to look like that. Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner. Casey, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sure, thank you.
This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. With us from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. We're going to the break now. When we come back, we'll check in with George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. There's more in a moment. This is the News Roundup on the Point. We're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Steve Junker. Joining me from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. And Jeff, Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station wants to save some money on its liability insurance. It's asking the Federal Oversight Agency for an exemption that will let it carry less insurance after it closes, scheduled to close at the end of May.
Yeah, can you believe that? It's actually next month, and it seems like we've been talking about this for so many years. But yeah, May 31st is when it's scheduled to be closed. So the owners of Pilgrim, which is Entergy Nuclear, is seeking federal approval to say, yeah, you know, we're going to shut down here So could we please lower our level of what they call off-site and on-site liability insurance? And the insurance right now that they're required to carry for off-site issues, they want to reduce from $450 million to $100 million, while on-site just a little over $1 billion down to $50 million. So very significant reductions. And they want these exemptions, if they're approved, to take effect about a year from now, in April 2020, 10 months after the shutdown and the removal of some of the radioactive spent fuel from the reactor. They also want to withdraw from a secondary private financial program that protects the plant as well. The owner's pitch here is saying that, the chance of something horrible, catastrophic, really goes down once the plant is shut down. They're saying that it really drops considerably for the chance of accidents, and that most of the accidents involve failures in the operating systems when there's fuel in the reactor vessel. Opponents say, no, you're trivializing this. It will be shut down, but there's still a lot of possibility for things to go wrong. And as far as precedents are concerned, other plants that have shut down, including Vermont Yankee, Crystal River in Florida, as well as plants in California, Wisconsin, the feds have granted them approval to lower their levels of insurance. One thing that came up in the story by Christine Legere, a reporter that follows Putin closely, is, probably the chance of an accident would go down, but the idea of sabotage was brought up, which is...
And it continues to pose a significant risk.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as that radioactive nuclear right. fuel is sitting there, which it will, right now will be for the foreseeable future, it poses a risk to the community. And that's another reason why. And I think there's concerns here cited in the article, too, about money that if they lower their liability insurance and then something does happen, again, who's on the hook? And it's state taxpayers.
That's right.
So some questions around that. We are going to speak now with George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. Hi, George. Good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm well. George, a lawsuit against the town of Oak Bluff stemming from a moped accident in which a young woman lost her leg has been dismissed by a judge.
Yeah, so this case was from back in 2016. It's Noelle Lambert. Came to the island for a visit. She was a UMass Lowell student at the time, rented a moped with her friends, and went off for an adventure, and sadly, she was struck by a truck, and after losing control, and she ended up losing her leg as a result. And it's just a horrifying story, it really did set off on the island, raising awareness of mopeds and concerns about, whether they should even be allowed. As folks probably know, the roads are very narrow here. Not a lot of shoulder area. Mopeds don't go particularly fast, and so people are trying to get around them. And there can be sand on the sides of the road, cause people to lose control, like what happened in this case. But this particular lawsuit was filed against Oak Bluffs, and basically saying that they should have that the moped dealers weren't following the regulations that were put forth by the town, and therefore the town was responsible. In the end, Judge Robert Ruffo sided with the town in this case, saying that they could not be held liable, that they're in these cases that they have immunity from claims that are taken against them. They are not responsible for the licensees that they issue in these cases. So that was the decision this week, and the debate about mopeds, of course, rages on. There's a home rule petition that was passed by unanimous vote at the Oak Bluffs town meeting a year ago, That's still wending its way through the Massachusetts legislature at this point. It did never came up for a vote in the last session, so it's gone back to committee to be considered. So mopeds still, you know, are rented over here, but, you know, people are given a long list of warnings ahead of time as a result of this and other accidents that there have been through the years.
Hey, George, I want to ask you about a little bit of other legal news. A recent court decision against the practice of parking officers chalking tires has prompted a lot of discussion around the region, not just on the island. But tell us what this conversation has been like on the island and a little bit about what this procedure means.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, chalking the tire, that's something that, you know, traffic officers have been doing for years. Basically, they're putting a little chalk mark to see how long you've been there. But a court in Ohio, and it's a federal court, has decided that that's unconstitutional because the Fourth Amendment, it violates the Fourth Amendment rights to illegal search. And the search begins when you put that mark on the tire and the driver hasn't done anything wrong. You know, they're parked legally in that spot. So it's pretty interesting. You know, we talked to a legal expert, and he said it doesn't yet apply here, even though it's a federal ruling because it was in a circuit court, but it could be used as precedent. And there are several departments on the island that use this method, Tisbury, Edgartown, and Oak Bluffs, to name a few.
And it's fairly widespread across the Cape, too, especially through the summer, for keeping track of how long people have been parked in this spot.
Absolutely. I've had my tire chalked in Falmouth, you know, and the idea is you want to keep people moving along in these busy town centers. There's not a lot of parking on the island. So the shop owners definitely want some turnover there. They want more people to be able to come into their shops and restaurants and things like that. So there has been a lot of conversation. People are saying they'd prefer to keep the chalk. They don't want parking meters. But Tisbury police are looking at these handheld devices that would be used for license plates. And in that case, you know, you would think, well, that's part of the car too, right? But no, it's a government property. A license plate is considered that. And that's a Supreme Court ruling in that case. And so that would be legal and wouldn't violate someone's constitutional rights.
But people have raised concerns now about parking license plate readers creating a whole new database that is a whole new government database tracking where you are over time, which is not
something
a lot of people want to see happen.
That's right. Big Brother watching you, right? Getting all this information. Just because you parked out in front of a shop in Vineyard Haven.
And so, compared to that, chalking the tire might seem a bit innocent, yeah.
Right, and, you know, even the police chief said, you know, it's sort of this, you know, easy method, and, you know, there's not much to it, but it's the best method that they've been able to come up with to make sure that people aren't, you know, parking in a spot all day long and tying up, one of these precious spaces.
George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. George, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good day.
Jeff Spillane is with me from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, there is political unrest within the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe where some members are taking issue with top tribal leaders.
They are, Steve. A recall process is underway to remove the chairman of the tribe, Cedric Cromwell, as well as Jesse Little Doe Baird, who is the elected vice chair of the council. Two petitions have been submitted this week with at least 100 signatures from tribe members who are claiming that the tribe is $500 million in debt to Genting Malaysia, which was its backer to get ready to have a casino in Taunton. And there was also an issue with a decision to keep Jesse Baird in power after she resigned in January. Tribal council member Aaron Toby, who has had issues with this administration even prior to being elected, said that, you know, this is a movement and tribal members are hurt and they're embarrassed. We have no casino, we have no jobs, and we have mortgage property. And so they allege malfeasance and wrongful conduct on the part of those two leaders. They also claim that the two conspired when Baird resigned, and they apparently talked together and kept her on the council. And so this is just on top of what's been happening with the tribe. Mm-hmm. Years and years and lots of money spent on fighting lawsuits by neighbors of the Planet Casino in Taunton and, you know, fighting the overturned decision by the court for its land and trust. And there's also been a lot of money spent on lobbying and some concerns over Chairman Cromwell's private businesses. Lots of drama there. So what happens now that the petitions have been submitted, they need to be certified by the tribe. The subjects of the recall petitions, that would be said, Cromwell and Baird, have 15 days to respond. Then a recall election could be held at a tribal meeting with at least 60% of the vote would have to be in favor of the recall, but there would also have to be at least 40% of the number of people who had voted in that election.
Hmm.
It's complicated.
It's complicated. Jeff, the owner of a historic house in Sandwich went before the town's historic district committee twice recently, and this has to do with the siding that she wants to put on her home, which was built in 1693.
Yes, this woman's been fighting this way for 37 years. Hard to believe. It was between a homeowner and the town's historic district committee. She wanted to replace wooden shingles with plastic siding on that home, which is right across from Town Hall in Sandwich. And she's been denied, and been denied a lot, I guess, over the past nearly four decades. And she said, you know, Sandwich is now becoming known for all of the deteriorating buildings. Obviously, there's so many historic buildings there. It's expensive to keep them up. So in February, she went before this committee seeking a certificate of appropriateness and had that hearing continued twice and then eventually denied, even though there had been a compromise where she said, okay, we'll put the wooden shingles on the front of the house, on the side we'll do the polymer. And even some of the neighbors said, yeah, that's fine. You know, the shingles are virtually identical, and there's too much focus on appearance here without considering the materials. But this one received some good news. Her name is Yvonne Anderson. On Wednesday night, the commission did meet again and approved her request to put these shingles on her home. And she goes, you know, if that didn't happen, she was ready and prepared to let her property rot. And that was a quote from her that our reporter, Tana Stenning, put in his story. So it looks like she finally got her way after nearly 40 years.
And still some people there a little unhappy with that
are.
Decision.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about one more story. This is a story that you reported this week that has to do with a couple of documents that belong to the county and their whereabouts.
Yeah, quick backstory on this. About a year ago, the county was getting ready for a reenactment of what they call the Barnesville County Declaration of Independence. County working with Tales of Cape Cod, a local historic preservation organization. Somebody happened to notice a frame in the county commissioner's office and said, wow, those documents look pretty old. Could we take a look at them and try to interpret what they are? And they were just two documents, or in what Leo Kakunas, a former commissioner, said, a $1.50 Kmart frame, crooked, discolored. Well, it turns out they're very, very old.
Just taped to the cardboard in here, yeah.
And I guess they had just been on the wall. Turns out they were a 1718 deed for a property by the family of Mercy Otis Warren, who leader and pioneer in the women's rights movement and first lady of the American Revolution. And the other was a handwritten copy of a poem called The Presbyterian Cat from the 1600s. So the general consensus was, yeah, let's preserve these now that we've found out what they are and keep them in the climate-controlled archives of the Sturgis Library in Barnstable Village, and then just give us a copy and we'll frame them and let people know what they are. Well, Commissioner Ronald Beatty wanted to know where those documents are. He wants them back because he said he's responsible as a commissioner in the care and custody of property of Barnstable County. And he actually said if they're not returned by May 1st, he was going to call the police. And then he took it a step further, went to the library himself on Monday, and according to the library director, bullied and strong-armed some of the staff. She wasn't there, and suggested that they were in possession of stolen documents. He denies any wrongdoing. But there has been a long history between the two organizations. There's a lot of the old documents stored in those archives.
A long history of cooperation.
Cooperation, oh yeah. Lots. And someone said hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of documents. And what it turned out to be, really, there was no bad intention here, but a little procedural error that just needs to be taken care of. It'll be taken care of next week, where it was considered Barnstable County property. And to give them, it wouldn't be given to the library or the Tales of Cape Cod, but to put them on loan, it just needs to be a vote of the commissioners. And they're going to rectify that at next week's meeting. So
so kind of a dust-up, but it looks
it
like
it's a little dust-up, yeah. And, you know, there's some folks in Boston that were involved as well, but all should be taken care of come next Wednesday.
That is our news roundup for the week. I want to thank my guest, Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, thanks for being here. And I want to thank Landry Harlan from the Vineyard Gazette, Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. We spoke with Josh Balling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror, Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner, and George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. I'm Steve Junker. Thank you for listening.